Hello, I'm Ben Eagle, a podcaster, journalist, and rural communications consultant, and welcome to Rural Business Focus. This is the podcast for rural businesses and those looking to start a business in the countryside. Episodes are released each Tuesday to inspire and support you to be your very best, both personally and for your business. Please subscribe to the show wherever you're listening, and if you think this episode will help someone you know, forward it on to them. It's the only way the show grows, by you sharing it. So thank you for that. But now, let's start today's show. Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 37 of Rural Business Focus. I hope you've all had a good start to the week. We have a very hopeful episode for you, and that's because we're talking about hope. My guest today has one of the most exciting and inspiring CVs that I've read. There's a lot on it. For over 15 years, Jamie Perry has worked for leading charities across the environmental arts, museums, circular economy, sports, hospice, and international development sectors. This has all come together to his current role as the founder and director of Lasting Change at the Hope Revolution Foundation, which is what we're talking about today. So how do we instill more hope in society, and how can we work together to make that sense of hope commonplace and an everyday thing? Well, I'm hoping that Jamie can give us some answers. Jamie, welcome to Rural Business Focus. Thank you so much for coming on. How's your week going?
It's great. Thank you, Ben. It's great. And it's great to be talking to you and to have the opportunity to talk more about the foundation and how it's developing and the work that we are looking to do and how people can get involved and support it in the future. But just more interestingly, just to break bread with you and, have a chat about hope. I just think it's an interesting thing and a powerful thing to discuss.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's, even away from podcast discussions, even just down at the pub or whatever, I don't think I've actually ever had that conversation. So I'm really looking forward to that as well. We'll go on to say what the Hope Revolution Foundation actually is and your sort of aspirations for it, and what it does. Mm. But I want to see if you can just start by telling us how it started as an idea, because you were inspired by your daughter, Amber.
Yeah, that's right. I think prior to Amber, it's worth noting I'd worked for charities for, 15, 20 years leading charities. And throughout all of that work, I had an understanding that hope is a very powerful tool. So hope, I believe, can keep people going. It can make people survive. If you look at people who've, had accidents and crawled down off mountains, it's that hope that enables them to crawl over miles after miles while the body's breaking down, that they can survive, they can do it. Hope can change things, and it can change things in the world. It's an incredibly powerful tool if it's realised. So I've always had that understanding, and I've always felt that it's underused. But you're quite right in saying that the first manifestation where I actually kind of proved that this was definitely a thing was with my daughter, Amber. So my daughter, Amber's a lovely little soul. She's very crafty and she likes making things. And back when she was maybe 10 or 11, she started making environmentally led soap. So, it was all natural ingredients and sourced, and she made her own gift paper and she used essential oils and she made this beautiful soap and used to give it to family and friends. And everyone loved it and said, wow, can I buy some? I'd like to buy some for gifts and so on. So Amber was encouraged to make a little enterprise, as you do. You want your children to understand that they don't necessarily have to work for people like I've done all my life. They can perhaps do something on their own. So she started making this the soap and selling it. And I said to her, look, do you realize that, you could sell this soap for soap, or you could actually sell something else with it. You could sell hope with it. And so the idea here was that people could buy a bar of soap for X amount of money. I think it was relatively cheap, maybe £3 or something, or they could pay 10 or 12 pounds, and they could buy hope with the soap. And that meant that for every bar of soap that they purchased, they would also pay for three trees to be planted and to be tended for in the heart of England forest. So my daughter was, this is never going to happen. Why would someone buy hope, you know, when they can get what they're only getting the soap? Why would they buy more? And there's a disbelief. And I explained to her, it's about the stories you tell, and that actually, if you give people the right options, that people will buy hope and do the right thing. The problem in life is that people in power and brands don't facilitate people to make the right options and to deliver the right options and have that choice. But when you provide the choice, they take it. So we tested it and we created a little Facebook page and we offered hope and we offered soap. And around about 80% of the people who purchased soap actually purchased hope. Within a very short period of time, she'd planted 200 trees, which is pretty much a small wood, I see. And this was all during COVID and, a period when we were together in the house and stuff. But it was definitely a realization that if you tell the right story, you have a right charitable partner, and if you give people the option to do the right thing and facilitate hope, that they will choose it. Mm. And that just made me galvanize my belief in actually, well, I need to be facilitating large brands, governments, people with influence and power to be providing people with that option, you know, to provide people with options of hope that they can purchase, buy, opt into, support, do things for. And that if you do that and you do that at scale, I believe a lot of people will choose it. So yeah, that was the beginnings of where the organization started to come together to scale up a small soap business that delivers trees for people into something a lot more bigger, basically.
Yeah, firstly, thank you for telling that story. I think there's so much in that. And I want to draw two things out of it straight away. Mm-hmm. And they're two themes that we actually seem to have conversations on again and again on this podcast with different people. Mm-hmm. The first is definitely the power of storytelling, which comes up again and again. And the other one is this thing you mentioned about belief versus disbelief. The fact that we actually have to move in ourselves, we have to move in our minds before we believe that something is actually possible. It is possible, but we've got to actually make that shift in our minds. We've already mentioned hope loads, but without actually sort of pinning down what it might be. And I'm interested in this one. So what is your definition of hope?
So that's a great question, because my definition of hope isn't passive. So, you know, if you have hope, but nothing materializes, that's almost hopeless, isn't it? Basically, it's false hope. So my definition of hope is always it's tangible and it's facilitated by the few for the many. It enables positive change. So hope without any impact is a false hope. So when I talk about hope, I see it as a realised positive and sustained change. I see it as a better life lived and realised. And I see it as, importantly, like smiles and contentment as well. You know, people who've got hope are generally quite happy. Yep. I think there's room when you provide hope to be playful. I think also playfulness is a really important tool. So as part of the brand guidelines or values of the organisation and what we do, you know, the part of it is to be playful as well. So I think, you know, hope is definitely, for me, something that is not just something woolly and that sits there and isn't actioned. It's something that's more tangible and that has impact. With those things together, I think it provides people with a life better lived.
I think that sense of impact is really important, isn't it? And I mean, there might I'll be really interested to sort of get feedback from people who are listening to this, because again, researching this episode as well, I've sort of gone through this shift in my mind, because again, like we were saying at the beginning, hope isn't really one of those things that I certainly haven't thought about it really at all. But when you start really digging down what it actually is and what it can do, like you say, that sense of impact, it's so much.
So I think that at the moment, there's never been a more important time for hope. You know, it's a very difficult and challenging time for lots of people for lots of different reasons all at the same time, whether, you know, war in the Ukraine, energy prices, on the bigger scale of things. You know, sometimes I look to my children and I feel sorry for the lack of hope that's been provided, because you know they're in the middle of the six major extinction events. The climate is warming. The gap between rich and poor is huge and growing by the day. Extreme weather is real commonplace, as indicated by the fact in 2005 my house was destroyed by a tornado, despite the fact I live in Birmingham.
Sorry, I've got to pause on that. You were on that street.
Yes. So, like, my house was completely and utterly destroyed by the tornado. It was one of the epicenters that was kind of on the front page of of all the nationals. And it, you know, it completely just one day I went out to work, and the next I come back, and it had destroyed my house. It's just an indicator of how things are changing that are undeniable. And then you kind of add to that people being glued to their mobile phones, people eating unhealthily, wildlife and biodiversity disappearing. So, like, you know, previously you might have looked to the dodo, as when I was a child, as an example of extinction, which had happened years ago on a foreign island. And now you look in your back garden, and every day there are wildlife and biodiversity that's going extinct. You know, we've lost 97% of wildflower meadows. We've lost 90% of hedgehogs. Every day, things are struggling to survive. And on top of that environmental and biodiversity negativeness and all the other things we've mentioned, humans in general aren't happy. You know, if you look around, there are lots of people eating unhealthily. They're glued to the phones. If you look around the street, people are just not with it. They're not connected to reality. They're spending hours and hours of their life unfulfilled on phones or watching box sets, and they're not living their life to the full potential. And this is something that I hope that hope can help change. And what our charity wants to do is to work with organisations and work delivering projects directly to address these things, because we think that hope can play a massive part in doing so.
Okay. Let's move on to the Hope Revolution Foundation itself then, in terms of what you want to do practically, tangibly.
Yeah. So we you know, we've talked about all of those negative things, and there are three areas that we are aiming to operate. So the first is very practical advice. So I've worked in charities for 20 years. I've worked across lots of different sectors. So if a charity needs help in delivering their objectives, and they're generally the facilitators of Hope charities, you know, they collect money and they turn it into amazing things. And without charities in the UK, the country would be in a very terrible state. I mean, if I look at the hospice care for the hospice charities I work for, they cared for nearly 1,100 families and dying children that was funded particularly by the public. Without that, all of that hope and delivery and excellence would not be delivered. And that's just one charity. We were helping three ways. The first is just some practical advice. If any charity wants to work with us and they need to earn more funds, be more impactful, get help in being a better charity, I will work with them directly and share my experience. And now I'm not working for one charity, it means that I can basically spread my experience across lots of different charities and be more impactful. So that's the first thing. The second is about facilitating hope. We've talked about the power of hope, Ben, but actually the belief behind the Hope Revolution Foundation is that if you are an organization with power and influence, I believe that you should have a responsibility to provide as much hope and as much change, positive change, as you have influence. So if you're a big government that has lots of influence, then you should be facilitating lots of hope and lots of change. If you're a brand and you're selling lots of things, that consuming things across the earth, you should be balancing that by providing things that counteract that and providing hope and engagement by charitable work that you're linking to. So the second part of the work that the Hope Foundation, Her Revolution Foundation, does is working with governments, large organisations or brands, and helping them be more environmentally friendly, be less impactful on the environment, but also facilitate hope. So they can, you know, we can work with them on bespoke projects for well-being with their staff or to help their customers or whatever it is that they want to do to provide hope, we can work with them on. And then the last thing, and the third thing, and probably the most one that's close to my heart, is the charity actually runs projects themselves and programs that facilitate hope directly with the members of the public. So we're not asking for anyone else. We're looking for funders to fund projects. And we've got 10 projects at the moment that have been strawmanned up. And that means that we've priced them all out of what we need to deliver them. And they work across a range of different people. And their aim is to work directly with people who are maybe unhealthy, maybe unhappy, maybe suffering or living with a condition, and to help provide them a chance to have a more fulfilled life.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your initial projects?
Yeah, so we've got 10 projects. Projects all aimed to help people have a more fulfilled life, so to reach their full human potential. So lots of people walk through life and they don't really find out what's for them. They don't feel special. They don't feel like they've got anything that it can do differently. They don't believe in themselves. And the symptoms of that are dreadful sometimes. So if we look at men under the age of 50, the largest killer of men under the age of 50 is suicide, you know, and that's been the way for a long time.
Yeah.
Since the 1990s, 3/4 of people who commit suicide are all men. And to think that that amount of men at the age of 50 are dying through their own hands is just, you know, it's tragic. So what can be done about it? So clearly there are a group of men who are extremely unhappy, that feel they don't have any options, they don't have any connection, they don't have any support. So one of the projects that we've created is called Fighting for Your Life. And basically, it takes a group of people suffering with mental health and basically gives them facilitated boxing training. And so it takes them through a program of learning how to box with a group of other guys, going through training, get mentally fit, getting physically fit, but also addressing, you know, some of their feelings with support and counselling and so on, with a view to kickstarting them into having a friendship group or having an outlet for something that just improves their mental health. And then off the back of that project, we're also looking to train people within gyms, so to offer 20 places to a mental health for boxing training course that's just been launched by Dave L, who's got an MBE in Banbury, at a thing called TriBox. And he will teach people who will be in gyms to recognize mental health problems and basically how to use boxing to actually support positive mental health. So that after we've worked with a group of people, and there's been that thing, we can repeat the project, but actually for every project we do, we're training people out in the community who can recognize people with mental health problems as a legacy for it.
Yep.
So that's kind of just one example of a project that for those people who are involved, they might have mental health issues. They would then be introduced into a network where they're getting physical exercise, they're getting mental support, they're meeting new people. And hopefully that's a catalyst for them to make positive improvements in their life.
Yeah.
So another example of a project that we're doing is something called Time in Nature, where we take people who are suffering with dementia. So at the moment, there are 850,000 people with dementia, and that's soon to reach 1 million people across the UK. My own mother, bless her, has dementia and is suffering or living with dementia, is a better way to put it. And it's a heartbreaking disease that strips people.
And so
this is something that's really dear to me. She lives in a very urban environment. She's not very mobile. She doesn't get access to nature. She doesn't get access to other people. So what this project will do, will work with people like my mother. They would have a ring and ride service where they collect these people and they take them to a local nature reserve in conjunction with a wildlife trust. And at that nature reserve, they would have some facilitated time with nature where they learn about nature. They might have an open fire. They might look at some old photographs or some object handling of older things that might bring back some memories. And they might do some things that they haven't done since they were kids, like roast marshmallows around a fire or have a sing-song or do some basket weaving. Again, it's like taking people who are disenfranchised, who aren't fully living their lives just because they're living with a condition, and it's facilitating something that will be a major catalyst to their general health and also a support to the people who are affected around them by it. So again, it's a great example. It's a completely different demographic of people. They're older, different age group, specifically in an urban environment, but it's a way in which hope can be provided to their lives and their carers, and they can live a more fulfilled and happy life.
Yeah, for me, and this is the great thing about this. Yeah, this is the great thing about it. It's the simplicity of the core, but it can be applied to pretty much just so many different situations.
Oh, exactly. I mean, there's some things that we really want to have fun with. There's one project, dad dancing, we call it. So everyone talks about dad dancing. Well, we wanted to get 20, 40 to 50 year old dads. Again, bearing in mind that a lot of this age group are prone to suicide and being disconnected, who've never danced, and basically put them into two groups and teach one of them how to break dance and one of them how to Lindy hop. And then finish with a performance. And they get Brilliant. So they get activity, they get connectedness, they get to achieve something they've never done before. And it's a great dance participation project. You kind of get an idea that of the sorts of things that we'd like to do. And these are the project side of things. Obviously, when we were looking to work with brands or organizations or governments, we would work to what their agendas and what they want to achieve are. And maybe do things at a larger scale. But for the charity to start with, these are some projects that we wanted to do that start off at a small scale. And obviously, if we manage to prove these as working really well and having impacts for people, we'd be looking to scale them regionally or nationally and so on.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, obviously, listeners of this podcast, most people will be either running a rural business of some kind, definitely be based in a rural area. They might be working by themselves. They might be a solo entrepreneur. But they might be thinking, oh, this is a great idea. How could they sort of either help you or get involved with what you're doing, or how could you help them?
I don't believe that there's any business too small enough or too large enough to deliver some kind of hope in some way and to have a better connection with their customers. So in my local village, there's a local coffee maker, and he's just started doing some work where he's funding some programs of education work. He's got to that stage in his business where he's earning enough money that he knows he's going to be comfortable, and he wanted to give something back. So if you're a business like that, then we'd love to work with you. And there's lots of projects that we could deliver that are, you know, can be small or large. If someone's listening who is a larger rural employer, you know, there's often large organisations working in rural areas. I think in things like NFU, National Farmers Union, Insurance, who are just outside of Stratford in a rural area. You know, if you're a larger organisation who's a rural business and, you know, you're looking to be more environmentally friendly, to have better mental health for your employees, and you want to do something for them to provide more hope to your staff, and then we'd love to talk to you. And if you're a small business, then, you know, watch this space. So at the moment, we're building a website will go live in May. So there's very limited information on us at the moment. The information is generally on LinkedIn. So you can search for the Hope Revolution Foundation on LinkedIn and keep up to date for the time being over the next month or two there. But we'll soon be launching a website, and we'd love to speak to anyone who likes the idea, who'd like to know more about the business, who'd like to know whether there's something, whether we can help in any way. Or if you're a rural charity who needs some support and advice, you know, I'm happy to give some free advice to small, really small charities if they're looking for a little bit of advice on how to grow all their funds or how to engage people. And if you're larger, then obviously I can support in other ways.
Brilliant. Let's broaden this out again. Bring it back to hope, I suppose. And I want to talk about mindset, which is, again, something we talk a lot about on this show. But do you think we can instill hope by simply reframing the way that we see things?
I think there's a huge opportunity that over the last, I mean, if I think when I first started to want to do this, when I left being a journalist and I worked across sales and journalism and marketing for the Birmingham Post and Mail for 13 years in newspapers and magazines. And when I left there, I nearly set up a business dealing with a green agency dealing with green businesses. And if I look back then, that's when all of this thinking really started to take place.
Okay.
If I look to now, you know, there are so many businesses out there and agencies and charities and brands who are starting to understand that actually people being green is not only vital and critical at the moment, but it's really good business. So there's lots and lots of opportunities now that are happening, and lots more brands doing more responsible things and linking with charities. My favourite Christmas advert over Christmas, and it made me cry dreadfully every time I watched it, I just thought it was so fantastic, was the John Lewis advert.
Yeah.
And they've got a charitable partner who deal with fostering. And the whole advert, there's nothing about John Lewis in it. You know, it's all about their charity partner. And it was absolutely superb. Whoever did the creative absolutely aced it.
It was
and
great.
I think it was called The Beginner, about the guy who wanted to learn how to skateboard. Mm. And he was doing it all. It makes me well up now. Mm. And he was doing it all because he was adopting a girl who liked skateboarding. I think there's a ripe opportunity now where every organisation, can you think of the power if every organisation just decided to do something? And if they did something, the world would be such a great place. And I think we're moving towards that, and we need to do that. But equally, reframing things, I think people don't believe that they can make a difference. So if they look at recycling, a lot of people will be like, well, why bother? If the problem's that big, you know, why bother? But I think the magic is in collective action. And if you think back to the original example of Amber, Amber was like, she didn't believe.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
What difference can I make? Well, actually, just believe. And other people believed, and they made a small difference. And one person said, well, I'll buy a tree. And another made, I'll buy a tree. And before you know it, there are 200 trees that will be fully grown, beautiful trees and home to wildlife and protector of development on that land long after I'm not here. There's an amazing opportunity for people who believe in hope and to take action, if it's facilitated, to achieve amazing things. If we can awake people from their unhappy slumbers, and we can get businesses behind it to help facilitate that hope so people have got choices to do the right thing, I really do think we can make a difference.
What I love about this is it's almost like the power of small actions as well, isn't it? If enough people come together to do something small, and then that builds up, what would that as a movement look like for you? What's the vision here?
Well, I think it's achieving all of these things at scale. And at the moment, I don't know what's possible. I don't know how much traction we'll get. I think to start with, you know, what success looks like to start with is, for like of the 10 projects that we've got, to maybe get 3 funded, and for those projects to be delivered really well at a relatively the scale that will people, you know, to start with, people aren't going to give us lots and lots of money to do things. So whatever money we're given, that we prove a massive impact with that, and that it starts to scale up to a larger level. After that, I think the sky's the limit. You know, I think I would, once I've got a couple of projects that have proved that we deliver well for the investment that we give and prove the impact that it has on people's lives, and also not just on people's lives. I think, you know, we're in a world in which some of the organisations who have the power and influence, whilst they want to have impact on people's lives, they also have got stakeholders and shareholders and business elements to it that you need to prove that actually it's good for business. You know, so I think if we can prove that it's good for lives and good for business, then that's when the magic happens and we can scale it up. So success for me is always about achieving scale, but I also need to be realistic that maybe in the first year or 18 months that scale just needs to be tempered with proving whatever we get given achieves a good business level and good impact, and therefore that'll open up going to scale.
This is quite a complicated one, and I'm sure there are going to be lots of layers to it. But what is it that drives you? Because honestly, I mean, I meet a lot of people. I meet a lot of people, and occasionally I meet someone like you. What is it that drives you?
I think on a personal level, you know, there is something called triptych about it, that, you know, it's nice to do the right thing. I've enjoyed working across my career. I've worked in the arts, and engaging people with arts and culture and museums was fantastic to see that light bulb turn on, and there's something lovely in that. And I've worked in recycling and keeping clothing out of landfill and repaired, and I've worked in hospices, and so all the charitable work is really lovely, and there's something for yourself that's really nice. think if you look deeper than that, when I was young, I was brought up by my grandparents. I didn't have an orthodox upbringing. My grandparents were great. I never wanted for anything. I got love and attention, but academically, I never really achieved at school. I slipped through the gaps. I never went to university. I didn't have an opportunity to dedicate my time to a particular subject. And I've always felt like there's something in me that there's an itch that I haven't scratched. Me believing that I can do something that is actually magical, memorable, and impactful on other people's lives other than my own. In life, I'm not particularly massively religious. I believe I'm quite spiritual. I believe, you either try and be on the good side of life or on the bad side of life, whatever that is. And sometimes there's a gray in the middle. I try to be a good person. And I would find it incredibly rewarding to make my daily job watching people fulfill their lives.
Yeah,
It's as simple as that, really.
sounds pretty good.
Yeah. I
Yeah.
mean, it feels like I wouldn't work again, which isn't that the plan in life? Yeah. Find a job that you love and never work again. Well, watching people wake up from a slumber of unhappiness, unhealthiness, unconnectedness, and suddenly find their drive in life and to be grateful and to go off and start being their own change maker. Wow, that sounds like that's not a job to me. So, yeah.
Sounds pretty good to me. Well, this is a podcast that celebrates self-starters,
Right.
and definitely that's yeah. This is a great example of that. But with that in mind, because it sounds like you've got there's a great foundation here. But I mean, what's the immediate sort of next step? Obviously, this is going to be sort of step
I
by
mean, the
step.
next step is I've got 10 projects that are great. At the moment, I've gone through lots of change myself. So I've moved to a new village. I'm living on my own, and I've started a new life myself. So there's the practical things for me of like, keeping a roof over my head and keeping the bills coming in and everything else. So there's a balance of doing work whilst also trying to get this fully off the ground. So the next real phase for me and the test of whether I can really get this flying is to get trusts and foundations or funders and basically to get them to buy, two or three of the 10 projects that I've created and say, right, let's do this and to do those projects. So between now and May, when the website launches, I'll be reaching out to trusts and foundations across the UK to start showing them the projects I've got, to start seeing whether they match with their objectives, to start seeing whether they will be prepared to fund the activities.
Well, we will watch this space.
Yeah, fingers
That's been
crossed. Let's have some hope.
exactly. It's been great. I'm going to move on to the final questions that
Yeah.
we ask everyone that come on the show. But
Yeah.
honestly, thank you for that conversation. That's
No problem.
been really inspiring. Yeah, we'll see how it develops. So the first of the final questions is, what do you do so that you keep focused on your goals? And these could be personal or professional goals.
So I try to dedicate, whilst trying to keep the roof over my head and paying the bills, obviously I have to dedicate getting a charity off the ground with practical things. So in order to ensure that this keeps moving forward, I always dedicate a day of my working week solely to moving stuff forward. And I have a project plan. I'm very organized and I will be writing up, researching, reaching out to people and so on. So that my focus comes by having one solid day where it's solely working on this charitable objectives, moving it forward 100% of the time for that whole day from morning, noon, and night. Otherwise, I'll keep things in and fit things in when I can throughout the week, but I've also got to balance that with some of the more consultative sides, like working with charities. At the moment, I'm working with a Ivor Novello winning poet to try and raise some funds for a new project that she's doing. So Liz Dinnett Johnson, she won an Ivor Novello for her work in Coventry Culture, a City of Cultures performance. The Child as a Witness at the Cathedral, and she's working on another project, so I'm helping her find some funds for that. I'm also working with the UK Centre for Hydrology and Ecology on some work for them. So this is kind of a balance working and supporting charities, which is, as I said, the first part of the thing with the charitable objective stuff, by making sure at least a day a week to a day and a half I spend solely on working on the things that haven't been materialized yet.
Yeah. The other thing I love about what you're doing is it's the diversity behind it as well, the diversity of people, the diversity of projects, the diversity of places as well. It's
yeah, I mean, it's like there's some lovely things that we want to do that are just, and some of them are so playful.
Yeah.
And there's one is about getting people dancing in their own homes, because we realize that some people you won't be able to reach. You can't reach them out of their homes because they're mainly in their homes, vegging on TV or watching social. But maybe you could get them dancing in their kitchen and posting videos of themselves dancing. And, well, they, you know, that might be playful, but actually they're being active and they're promoting their videos to other people and connecting with people. And off that, you might be able to do healthy eating. So, you know, so there's so many different projects that we've got that reach different sorts of people and work in different ways. And that's the beauty for me, I think, is that there's so much out there to go at that's not right, that needs correcting or needs support. And actually, I'm a believer that I don't actually think it's that hard to make a massive difference. I believe I can do it.
Yeah.
I just need the funds and support to do it.
Yeah. Again, it's that culture of belief, isn't it?
Yeah.
Next, opportunity to promote another rural business or a social media account, someone who you think is doing a good job.
Definitely, yeah. So I live in a small village called Kyneton. I've been there a year. Fantastic village. So it's in South Warwickshire, not far from Gaydon. It's got about 2,500 people there, and it's a thriving little town. But everyone's village, but everyone's lovely there. And there is a corner cottage bakery that's a relatively recent addition, maybe been there like 9 months or something to the village. A small bakery that's made a massive difference. I'm a great bread lover.
Fantastic.
So I'd like to give them a shout out, Corner Cottage Bakery. They do the best cakes, and they do a speciality bread every week, which keeps me a bit rotund. I can't resist bread. It's just so nice. And they'll do things like blue cheese, pear and walnut bread, or like chorizo and chili bread. I mean, it's just amazing. Oh, but it just keeps me bloated. And then also... my local pub is a great little village business. You know, pubs struggle a lot these days, and it's the hub of the community. The people in the village who go to that pub are lovely. So the White Swan pub in Kyneton, it's a great little village pub. They have a band once a month. They have good ale, and they have lovely people who visit there. I don't know anyone in there who I've met in the last year who's been horrible or anything. They've been really nice people. It's a really well-run pub.
Brilliant. Everyone go and support them. And also just support your local pub as well, wherever
Indeed.
You are. I will be heading down to my local community pub later on this evening. Finally, you've obviously mentioned LinkedIn. So LinkedIn is probably the best place to get in touch at the moment.
Yeah, so LinkedIn. So if you search the Hope Revolution Foundation on LinkedIn, you'll be able to follow us, and any kind of announcements about the website that comes up. The website will be the Hope Revolution Foundation.org.uk, but I don't expect people to remember that. If anyone wants to email me, I don't mind putting out my email. It's Jamie A.I. Perry. That's Jamie, J-A-M-I-E, A-I, Perry, P-E-R-R-Y, at thehoperevolutionfoundation.org.uk. Happy to help anyone if they need support or if they want to find out more or so on. But from May, we'll have a website, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and so on. And we should hopefully have some funded projects. Maybe we could come back and show you some of the stuff we've done
That'd be
in
awesome.
A year's time or something.
Yeah, I'd love that. Listeners, all those details are in the show notes. If you just want to head down there and see those. Wow, Jamie, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for the
opportunity. Inspiring one.
Right, Ben.
That's been really good. And yeah, best of luck going forward. That is it for today. Thank you very much for listening. I would love to hear your thoughts on today's episode, as always. And perhaps what you're most hopeful for the year ahead, or maybe even for society generally. What are you hoping for in your business? What small actions can you do to improve the lives of others? You can find us on Twitter at @ruralbf_pod. Or on Instagram at Rural Business Focus. As a call to action today, this is something I've started doing recently on the pod, as well as leaving us a review, please, wherever you're listening, would be to write down three things that you will do to inspire positive change in your business or your organization in the next month. and how you will act on that. Any extra info you might need about this episode is in the show notes, so check those out. Next time, we'll be talking about how and why the rural sector should be embracing digital more, how it could embrace digital more, as well as how it's already embracing it. And I'll be joined by a panel of guests, including Camilla Hazelden Ashby from Field Margin, Emma Simkiss from Freestyle, and Adam Short from Temple Technologies. For now, though, I will leave you in the way that I leave you every episode. Try to do one thing this week that helps you progress and one thing that helps someone else. Keep focused, and I will see you next time.